Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. 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 No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights, everyone. I'm Charlotte Spicer. Thank you so much for tuning in from the United States and around the world. If you're new to the show, thank you for being here, and I encourage you to explore all that we offer the Spiritual Insights community. In addition to producing these segments, I am an energetic healer and channel for Jesus. Today, I want to introduce a new monthly segment series with someone who offers profound yet simple advice to the spiritual community. Bill Ferguson first appeared on the show in 2013. I've invited him to join the Spiritual Insights Wisdom Panel to share his light and insightful discoveries about life with all of you in our series entitled The Nature of Reality. In these segments, Bill and I will share our thoughts on a variety of topics that contribute to reality as we live it. As the landscape for all of collective humanity changes in this new age, with the COVID-19 pandemic serving as an enormous catalyst for change, we felt these discussions would inspire listeners as they evaluate the quality of their lives and move forward. Bill began his career as a divorce attorney and gained national attention for his ability to take the conflict out of divorce. Ultimately, 15% of his clients never followed through with divorce, and the ones who did were able to part as friends. Bill's work has been called the quote-unquote penicillin of psychology. He's been featured on Oprah, recommended by both the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, and has written several best-selling books, including Get Your Power Back, How to Heal a Painful Relationship, and Miracles Are Guaranteed. He has worked with thousands of people around the world. On his website, you can browse his bookstore and find an array of articles and videos. He also offers a newsletter with tips to creating a great life, and you can learn about individual support and the Mastery Course, a step-by-step process for resolving problem areas, healing relationships, and creating a great life. Bill also offers individual consulting sessions to give you the freedom and the direction you need to handle your situation. With Bill's guidance, most situations take only a few sessions to resolve. Visit masteryoflife.com to explore all of these options, and visit spiritualinsightsradio.com to join the Spiritual Insights community, review the archives of divine transmissions, and learn more about my energetic healing work with the divine. So, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in embracing my new special guest co-host, Bill Ferguson. Welcome to the Spiritual Insights community, Bill.
Hi there. It's great to be with you. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. It's been something I've always wanted to do since working with you the first, second, and third time years ago. And so I'm very excited to offer this to the listeners. I wanted them to understand what it is that you're doing, what your work is, and what you offer the community in terms of helping them fix their lives.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've discovered that for me is really fascinating, and that is that anytime, every time, there's a relationship or any area of life that isn't working, that which we think is the problem ultimately is never the problem. It's always the symptom of something deeper. There's an underlying condition of resisting or hanging on that destroys our ability to see what needs to be done and forces destructive behavior.
Okay.
And basically, what it is like at any moment, what so is always what so. What happened is what happened. You know, your situation is the way your situation is. It's like, it just is. It just is. And when you can be at peace with the truth of the way things are, you automatically look in a direction where solutions and opportunity and possibilities show up. And I get an example I can use to show you this. If you look at the areas of your life that work great, those are areas where you can flow with whatever happens. Things happen you don't like, but you don't get hooked. You take effective action. If you look at the areas of your life that don't work, those are areas where you can't flow. And of course, why we can't flow is because those areas of life strike a nerve. We're threatened. So to avoid that perceived threat, we fight the circumstance that triggers the hurt. And in fighting the circumstance, all of our focus is on resisting. And the resisting is literally 180 degrees opposite of where the solutions are. So instead of putting our focus on what do I need to do based on the facts, the focus is on fighting the facts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which then sets in motion a number of very destructive processes, all of which make the situation worse.
How so?
Well, for one thing, you create a state of upset. So let's look at upsets. When we get upset, it looks like the upset is caused by what happens, but that's an illusion. No circumstance has the ability to create an upset. An upset is an inner experience. It's a state of mind, and it can only exist if we're fighting what happened.
I agree.
Yeah. So to see this in your life, pick a time when you've been upset and notice that what happened happened, and notice how totally irrelevant our feelings are about it. It still happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then notice what would happen to the upset if somehow you were at peace with what happened. The upset would disappear.
It would dissolve, absolutely.
It would dissolve, because upsets are never caused by what happens. They're caused by fighting what happens. The moment you can surrender to the truth, okay, what happened happened, then automatically you put your focus on what do I need to do based on facts?
To find a solution. Okay.
Yeah, give you an example. My wife and I used to have a black and white cat. And that cat wouldn't bark. And I could yell at the cat. I could scream at the cat. I could plead with the cat. I could rationalize with the cat. But it just wouldn't make any difference, because no matter what I did, that cat wouldn't bark. That's a fact. The cat didn't want to bark. That's a fact. Okay. Well, if I can surrender to that truth, the truth is the cat's not, cat didn't bark and it's not gonna. Well, if I can surrender to that truth, and if I want to hear barking, then what do I need to do? Go get a dog.
There you go.
See, when you're at peace with the truth, you automatically look in a direction where solutions and opportunities show up. In any area of life that isn't working, instead of putting the focus on what do I need to do based on the facts, the focus is on fighting the facts. So in my cat example, I'm going to be blaming the cat. The cat's the problem. What's the matter with that doggone cat? And in my fighting the cat, not only do I lose my ability to see what needs to be done, but in my fighting the cat, now the cat is starting to bite. So in my fighting the facts, I destroy my ability to see what needs to be done, and I'm guaranteed to make my situation worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So is this what you do with clients in the mastery course and the other counseling sessions that you offer, is help them to see what truths they're in denial of?
Yeah. Literally anytime there's an area of life that isn't working, that's never the problem. That's the symptom. There's always an underlying condition that's destroying our ability to see what needs to be done. And it forces us to act in a way that magnifies the problem. So what I do when I work with people, and I do this when I work with them individually, and I do this through the mastery course, I have people discover the underlying condition that's creating all the suffering. And then when they remove that underlying condition, they restore their ability to see clearly. And then solutions and opportunities show up. And then that area of life starts clearing up. And that can happen very, very fast.
Wow. Fascinating. So you're saying that it's not really the circumstance, the truth, or the facts that are hurting you. It's your reaction to it.
It is never, 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 never the circumstances. Literally, anytime, every time, there's an area of life that isn't working, what's happening is we're fighting the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and when you can surrender to the truth, then you can see what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's another example. I want to talk about how we lose our power.
Okay.
Okay. Because one of the things that when you fight the truth, you know, you create a state of upset. You destroy your ability to see what needs to be done, and you lose your power. So I want to talk about this.
Okay.
At any moment, we are totally, hopelessly at the effect of the world around us. No matter what happens around us, we're going to react.
Yes.
We're hopelessly at the effect of the world around us. But what we don't notice is that simultaneously, the world around us is totally, hopelessly at the effect of us.
Absolutely.
No matter what you do or don't do, the world around you is going to respond to you. That makes you the cause.
Yes.
So we're totally at the effect, and simultaneously, we're totally the cause.
Absolutely.
Both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But we only experience ourselves as being one or the other. When you experience yourself as being at the effect, life is on top of you.
Yeah.
Anytime we're upset, anytime we feel like life's on top of us, anytime that happens, we're at the effect.
And feeling totally powerless to do anything about it.
That's right. When you're at the effect, you're powerless. Also, you start becoming negative, you lose your confidence, and if you stay at the effect long enough, it leads to depression and all sorts of dark, nasty things.
Self-pity.
Yes.
Anger, blame, shame, all of it.
Yes. So when we're at the effect, not only are we powerless, but we create a tremendous amount of suffering.
Yes.
See, but what we don't notice is that we're at the effect, we're the victim of our circumstance, and we're also the creator of our circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can shift from being at the effect to being at cause, you create a whole different life. So let me give you an example of getting at cause.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Like, how do you get there?
Have you ever had a time when there was something that you were at the effect of, and it just nagged at you and it nagged at you, and then you reached a point where you decided, all right, enough is enough. I'm tired of messing with this. I'm going to handle it, and I don't care what it takes to handle it. I'm going to handle it, and you started taking action.
Hundreds of times.
Yeah. Notice the moment you do that, you shift from being at the effect to being at cause.
Absolutely.
You get your power back. So when you're at the effect, you're powerless. But when you're at cause, you can chart your course. You can make things happen. You're on top of life instead of life being on top of you. So the name of the game is to live your life at cause. And it's possible to be at cause almost all the time.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But there's something that we do. And also being at cause, that's the natural state. When you're free of all the junk, you're automatically a cause. But there's something that we do that takes away our power and puts us at the effect. What we do is we fight the truth. We fight our circumstances. And the moment we fight our circumstances, we give our circumstances power that they don't inherently have.
Yes.
We make our circumstances the cause. We make ourselves the effect. And the moment we make ourselves the effect, we set in motion a process that produces tremendous suffering and has us lose our power. So one of the things that happens, like when you fight the truth, you create a state of upset, you destroy your ability to see what needs to be done, and you lose your power.
You literally just hand it over to the circumstance.
You hand it over.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you're at the effect, if what you can do is surrender to the truth of the way things are, I hate it that this is the way things are, but this is the way things are. Based on the facts, what do I need to do? The moment you create a plan of action based on the facts and you commit to that plan of action, you shift from being at the effect to being a cause.
Fascinating.
Get power back fast.
And it's really reclaiming like your sovereign self. We are creators. We are beings that are here to create. So yeah. To relinquish that, to submit to the circumstance and just lie down and say, okay, I'm the victim. There's nothing I can do. That's not a natural state of being.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. But that's what we do all the time.
All the time.
Anytime you're upset, you're fighting the truth. Anytime you're in the presence of an area of life that isn't working, there's something that you're fighting. Here's another
thing. Okay.
When we're in a state of upset, our decisions and actions are based on emotion.
Totally.
When you're at peace, your decisions and actions are based on fact, which produces a very different result.
Very. And what I always say is that life reflects back to you, because there is still that cause and effect that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But life tends to reflect back to you what you don't see in yourself. It makes you look at these things. And then when you react to a circumstance, your emotional reaction, as you say, the emotions are the threat. Those are the problem. But the emotional reaction for me is just a re-triggering of a previous hurt. And now you're feeling that hurt that much more acutely and piling it onto the present circumstance. And now you're a mess.
Yeah. And then what happens is that suppressed hurt grows and grows and grows.
Yes.
And then the irony is that everything we do to avoid that hurt creates more of it.
Absolutely.
Because what happens is that that hurt is perceived as a major threat to our survival. So to avoid that threat, all of our focus is on how do I make life be a certain way? How do I make the circumstances be a certain way so I don't have to feel my hurt? That creates a state of tunnel vision.
Yes.
That tunnel vision destroys our ability to see what needs to be done because the solutions are outside the tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the tunnel vision, there's only like 2 degrees of possibility. In the tunnel vision, all we can do is fight, resist, hang on, or withdraw. But you get rid of the tunnel vision, then all of a sudden, instead of having 2 degrees of possibility, you've got 360 degrees of possibility. You can see solutions that you could never have seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like anytime you're in a difficult situation, top priority is get your peace back. And the more you get your peace back, the more you see clearly, the more you get your effectiveness back.
But we need to recognize that when we are looking at a situation and we are limiting the type of outcome that would be possible, when we're limiting what we would prefer, what we would accept as an outcome, that's when, you know, we even fortify that tunnel vision, because there's so many other possible solutions. And this is just keeping yourself trapped in it. And to get your peace back, you have to come to acceptance. It is what it is.
Yeah. Here's another aspect of all of this. fear.
Yes.
Fear is like an upset. An upset is created by fighting and resisting a past or present event. A fear is created by resisting a future event. So, for example, let's say I have a relationship with somebody and I have a fear of losing her.
Right.
Well, the more I resist losing her, the bigger my fear.
Sure.
The bigger my fear, the more I'm threatened.
Mm-hmm.
The more I'm threatened, the more I get tunnel vision, the more I act destructively. I hang on to her. I get upset easy. I may try to control her. But what will happen is that in my fear of losing her, I will act in a way that will destroy love. And instead of creating an environment where she's going to want to be with me, I'm creating an environment where she's going to want to avoid me.
Mm-hmm.
So in my fear of losing her, I set in motion a process that tends to push her away.
Yes.
Which then brings to me my fear. So whatever we fear, we tend to create.
Yes, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy based on the behavior that you exhibited with the jealousy, possessiveness, and control. Just trying to control the circumstance means you're out of control of the circumstance.
Exactly. And another way of looking at this, another way of saying this, is that whatever you resist, no matter what it is, whatever you resist, you're going to magnify and give power to it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it is, it's like a law of physics. Give me an example.
Okay.
Imagine on the ceiling above you, four large yellow balloons.
Okay.
Now, whatever you do, don't think about them.
Okay.
Okay, what happens when you try not to think about the yellow balloons?
My focus sharpens on the yellow balloons.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the same principle applies in every single area of life. Whatever you resist, you're going to magnify and give power to it. Another example, have you ever had a relationship with somebody and that person had a characteristic that you couldn't stand and you resisted the characteristic?
Sure, of course.
Notice what happens to the characteristic. It grows, and it grows not only in your perception, it actually shows up more in the physical world around you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You resist losing somebody, you resist a future event, you resist losing somebody, you can act in a way that's going to push her out the door.
I love the way you put this. And yes, it when you resist a certain characteristic or even an idiosyncrasy, you know, something they do, some little tick, the more it gets on your nerves, the more it gets on your nerves. It just amplifies the agitation to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just interesting because you will actually magnify, you will cause it to show up more in the physical universe around you. Not only will you see it more because of your perception, but it will actually physically show up more.
Absolutely. And I found a way to circumvent that, if you'd like to hear it. I had a situation years ago, shortly after I met my husband, and we were probably about 2 years in, going on 2 years. And I started to notice that he was saying things that triggered me. And being a diehard student of A Course in Miracles and at that time sharing it with him, I said to him, I said, I have to stop you mid-sentence. I'm sorry, but I feel triggered right now, and I want to go figure out what triggered me. He says, well, what did I say? I said, you said something that hurt my feelings. He said, but I wasn't trying to. I said, I know you weren't, and I know you wouldn't. So I need to go figure this out. So I excused myself, went to another room, sat down, and said, what's really bothering you? What is it? What's being triggered? And I let the answer come up from my gut. And the answer was that whatever his statement was, it reminded me of something my mother had said in my childhood. I said, okay. I sat there. I did the forgiveness work, felt better, went out and said, all finished. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what happens. It's like it's never, 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 never the circumstances.
Never. It's never what's in front of you. It's something that's behind you that's being triggered the first time it happened or another instance.
Yeah, and it's really beautiful what you, the words you use. It's not something in front of you, it's something behind you.
Absolutely.
But it's so true. But it's like we live in a world where all the focus is outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
He said, mm-hmm. she said. We're taught that happiness and upsets come from outside of ourselves. So if we want to be happy and not upset, we need to make outside of us be a particular way.
Yes.
So we fight, resist, hang on, withdraw, trying to make life be a certain way. But what happens is instead of creating the happiness that we seek, it destroys it. Instead of avoiding upsets, it creates it. And our trying to force life to be a certain way, we create tremendous suffering and we keep our dreams from coming true.
You know, it sounds complicated, but it really is quite simple. It's just that how do we share with how to, let's say, plug into the simplicity of it? Yeah. Where do you start?
It's very, very simple. Easier said than done.
Absolutely.
But very simple, because once you see it, you just can't argue with it.
That's true.
But you can go a whole lifetime and never see it.
That's also true. You can change your perception. But once you do, you can't go back to the old perception.
Once you have that awareness.
Yeah, the game pieces always move forward, never backwards when it comes to consciousness.
So the key is to focus inside rather than outside. Because as long as we're focusing outside, we're focusing on the symptoms. And if you don't get to the cause, nothing's going to change.
This is true. This brings me to a very important point. But finish your idea or your thought.
It's just that, like, we have this internal programming that's based on all of our decisions, our beliefs, and most importantly, our hurt, our suppressed hurt. And then it's like a programming, like a computer always acts consistent with its programming. Well, so do we.
Yes, absolutely.
So mm-hmm. we have all of our internal programming, all of our junk. And then that forces us to act in a particular way, which forces life to respond accordingly, which then reinforces our reality.
And we're back to cause and effect.
Yeah.
And flip-flopping between the two.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautifully said.
So when you shift inside, when you heal inside, you change how you relate to life. And when you change how you relate to life, you change what happens around you.
Now, would you agree then that once we look inside, the thing we need to endeavor to do is to really see what's bothering us. What is this unhappiness you keep trying to bury, push down, push away, externalize, or project onto something else and blame somebody? We have to really take a look.
Yeah, and a very, very powerful question is, why can't I be at peace with the truth?
Especially when it's about me.
Well, it's like anytime if there's any circumstance that we're not at peace with, because what so is always what so. What happened is always what happened.
Yeah.
You know, the facts are the facts. It just is. In fact, all there is. We make up all the rest. So if there's something we can't be at peace with, why we can't be at peace with it is ultimately because it hurts.
Absolutely.
So, powerful question. If there's ever any circumstance you can't be at peace with, very powerful question. Why can't I be at peace with the truth? And then that takes the focus off of the circumstance and it puts the focus on the inside. And then when you focus on the inside, that's where you find solutions. That's where you can have a healing. That's where you change the programming. And that's what changes your life.
Fabulous. I wanted to bring in current circumstances into the conversation and the equation, and let's apply it to this. We're still in the COVID-19 era. In 2020, it's like God put the whole world on a timeout, is how I like to put it, and said, no, you need to look at yourself. So what was removed was a lot of the external that we focus on. We had to go within, stay within our homes, and then once all the closets were cleaned and the garages were cleaned out, And the old clothes were, put in a box to be donated. What were we left with? Ourselves. And so we went through a major transformation over the past year of looking at our lives. And I like to say that COVID-19 is the microscope through which we evaluated our lives and what we want to do with them. So you're seeing a lot of career changes. People are jumping ship. They're quitting jobs without having another one and taking a leap of faith and saying, no, I've been in this rat race and in this stuck pattern for so long, and I can't take it anymore. So we've reached our limit. I wanted your thoughts on how this applies in the COVID era. What was your observation of people you worked with?
Well, it's the same thing. People seem to be more stressed now than any time since I can remember. And in that stress, people are on edge. They get upset easy. They lash out. They draw sides. There's so much of the suffering that's happening in our planet is coming from like all this stress. But all the stress is coming from fighting the truth.
Yes.
I like to think that all the suffering, all the craziness that's happening on the planet is to put us in a place where we start looking inside, to put us in a place where individually and collectively, we need to be able to flow with life and we need to focus on what do we need to do.
Absolutely. And we're not flowing with it. We're trying to keep up with it. And it's too much and it's too hard and it's too complicated and it's too imbalanced and too much in favor of one set of people and neglects and disenfranchises other sets. Everything about the world has been touched by COVID. Everything about the way it works. And now we're getting to see truths that we've just ignored. That we flat out ignored with how life is being governed and how we respond to it. And I'm looking forward to a major, let's say, big reveal for humanity about the truth and how we want life to be instead of trying to fit into something that is just too much.
Yes. Yes. One of the things I've noticed is that people tend to have to hit the bottom before they have an awakening.
Sure.
People tend to have some serious thing in their life before they start shifting their focus.
Yes.
And I suspect that the same thing is true for a culture. And in our case, it's not just a planetary culture. I mean, it's not just the U.S. culture, it's a planetary culture.
Got you.
Yeah, because we come from a place where it's all about the circumstances, trying to make circumstances be a certain way. And that, and it's not about love. One thing that's interesting, there's two different realms in life. There's the realm of who we are, which is that experience of love. And in that experience of love, you're happy, you're alive, you're free. The circumstances of life have absolutely no power over you. You have a very positive energy. You radiate that positive energy and great things happen around you. That's the natural state of who we are. When you're in that state, you're in the place referred to as in the light.
Okay.
And that's the realm of love, joy, peace, happiness, and miracles.
Right.
And then you got the realm of the darkness. And in the realm of darkness, instead of having to focus be on the inside, the focus is on the outside. In the darkness, it's all about the circumstances. It's fight, resist, hang on, withdraw, force people in life to be a certain way, thinking it'll somehow bring us to happiness.
Right.
And that's the realm of fear, upset, and suffering. So we have, literally, we have two different realms. We have the realm of who we are, the light, and we have the realm of circumstances, the darkness. Totally opposite realms with totally opposite consequences. And everything we're taught to do in the realm of circumstances creates more suffering, and everything we're taught to do in the light creates more light, and the two rules are 180 degrees opposite.
Absolutely. Wow.
In the realm of circumstances, you want something, you got to be willing to lose it. I mean, in the realm of circumstances, you want something, you hang on to it. Right. In the realm of love, you want something, you got to be willing to lose it. In the realm of circumstances, run from your hurt. In the realm of love, run towards it so you can get rid of it. You know, in the realm of circumstances, keep your walls up to protect yourself. Sure. In the realm of love, let your walls down. The greatest protection is an open heart.
And defenselessness.
Yeah. So
it might sound funny to hear that defenselessness is the best defense, but the defense is a magnet. It's going to attract something to tell you that defense is not necessary.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's like, for me, it's the willingness to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because the more I'm willing to be vulnerable, the love that is who I am, who all of us are, comes out. And then as that love comes out, the people around me feel safe, their walls come down, and they give love back. So literally, the willingness to be vulnerable is the greatest protection, because it dissolves opposition and resistance. The unwillingness to be vulnerable, when you got your walls up, you're going to destroy love and you're going to create opposition and resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So our walls don't protect us. They create more suffering. And then here's the thing that's so interesting about the walls of protection. We put the walls of protection up so we don't have to feel our hurt.
Yeah.
But what side of the wall is the hurt on?
The inside where you are, and the wall that you're banging your head against.
Yes, the hurt. The walls of protection don't keep the hurt out.
Out.
The walls of protection keeps
the hurt in.
I want to be vulnerable. I want to be vulnerable, because life works so much better in that place.
Yes,
That willingness to be vulnerable, it doesn't mean be a doormat and let the train roll over. You say no whenever you need to say no. You just do it with love.
And it's such a good feeling to get there and be able to set those boundaries and express yourself and say, no, that doesn't work for me. I don't like that. I don't want to do that. I'd rather do this. Let's find a compromise. To be able to let that flow and express yourself is such a departure from the coiled up, how are they going to react? What are they going to think of me? I don't want to do that, but I think I should. Oh, but they're going to be angry with me. All the people pleasing, all of the insecurity is gone. It dissolves when you can get to that place and feel the defenselessness of confidence.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. And all destructive behavior is done in the avoidance of hurt. And the more you're free of the hurt, the destructive, what's left is love. And in that state of love, there is no destructive behavior.
No, it has nothing to respond to. It's not there. Yeah.
And one thing I suspect very strongly is that ultimately all of life's lessons are brought to us to learn how to let go and trust.
I believe. I concur with that. Mm-hmm.
Because the more you let go and trust, life works fine.
So in terms of boundaries, these are the healthiest things you can do, because this tells you how much you respect yourself, for me. When you respect yourself, I know self-love is a big word that we like to toss around, but it gives people funny feelings sometimes. So I say self-respect. When you respect yourself enough to set healthy boundaries, not only with others, but with yourself, and say, no, there needs to be a limit to this activity or food or what have you. When you respect yourself enough, that gives you the love that you're craving, you know, and that's when you start giving that. But when it comes to loving unconditionally, keep that in place. Love unconditionally, but relationships should have boundaries.
Here's another take on boundaries.
Okay.
What's powerful is not so much the boundaries. What's powerful is the ability to say no when you need to say no.
Yeah.
See, that's what's really powerful. So often what happens is that when people make boundaries, they draw a line in the sand and they say, don't cross this line. But what happens is when you draw a line in the sand, you invite people to cross it.
That's true.
So the power is not in setting a bunch of rules for how people need to be.
Right.
The power is being able to say no when it's appropriate to say no.
And the certainty within you that you emanate when you say no. When you do that, you don't need the line in the sand. You remind me of something funny. When I got my first apartment, I was 20 years old. And I spent a lot of time thinking, what do I want life to be like inside this space? And then I thought, well, what about when people come over? So I created a list of rules on how they were to behave under my roof, in my space. Since I was the first one in the whole neighborhood who had their own place, because I noticed people like to make comments, or they just like to break each other's chops. But I don't like that. I saw it as abusive. And so I was like, nope, you don't do this, you don't do this, and you don't do this. As I got older and as I worked my way through those issues of trying to control other people's behavior, especially in a space where I had legal claim to that control, I've realized that it was just a list on the wall by the door. It wasn't coming from here. It wasn't coming from me.
Yeah.
That's why it's so easy to cross. But when that's strongly coming from you, people don't dare cross it. They know they can't. Yeah. So they don't try. You agree?
Well, for me, it's like I have no boundaries. And part of that is the willingness for anything to happen. Being willing in my heart, not necessarily my actions. Mm-hmm. And then as circumstances pop up, sometimes it's appropriate for me to say no. And it's very easy for me to say no. I do not have a problem with saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be why I haven't needed boundaries. But for me, I don't have rules for how people should be.
Right.
I want people to be who they are. And sometimes it's appropriate to say no.
Absolutely. And I have cultivated that acceptance of others as they are, where they are. I meet them where they are. In almost all cases, I think I'm representing the percentage of the listeners who did the people-pleasing thing and didn't understand why, had the self-doubt, self-loathing, all that self stuff that makes your relationships and interactions so tricky and so frightening that you wind up bending yourself up into a pretzel trying to make something work. That's the population I'm representing.
Yeah, and then what happens, because ultimately all that's to avoid hurt.
Absolutely.
And then what happens is people will sell their soul to have a relationship work. The only problem is it doesn't have the relationship work.
Right.
You know, it's like we're afraid to say no. We're afraid to take action. We're afraid to have conversations. We're afraid for this or for that. But when you can't do those things.
Mm-hmm. We don't want the rejection. We don't want rejection that could potentially lead to loss, which hurts us.
Exactly.
And so it's that cycle. The things we do to ourselves, it's amazing.
And ultimately, the fear of rejection is the fear of a very, very specific hurt. And we need to talk about this in another session. But what happens, real bottom line, what happens is that we're born happy, alive, and free. Just look at little kids. You know, we're born clean slates. We're happy, alive, and free. But we're born in a world that kills it.
Yeah.
So in the process of growing up, we get hurt. We get hurt a lot. We collide with our culture. We experience very, very painful losses of life. We experience rejection and validation. And as a little child, the only way we can explain these incredibly painful losses of love is to blame ourselves. Clearly, I'm the problem.
Absolutely.
And then we decide what that problem is. I'm not good enough. I'm not worth loving. I'm worthless. I'm a failure. I'm this. I'm that. And it is never, never, never the truth. But in the eyes of a little child, it becomes our truth. And then we spend the whole rest of our life running from it, doing everything we can to prove it's not true. And if any circumstance comes along and hints that it is true, mm-hmm. that circumstance will be perceived as a major threat to our survival.
Major threat. I mean, we're talking full catastrophic threat here.
People will commit suicide rather than feel that emotion.
I was just visualizing that, like people just throwing themselves off a roof, then deal with this and face this.
But that's what happens.
And, you know, I've said before in other segments, you know, when we experience abuse, neglect, or indifference in our early childhood development, we don't hate the people who do this to us or that we perceive have not provided what we thought we were entitled to. We turn on ourselves. We start to hate ourselves. But we can't bring ourselves to hate the person who perpetrated the abuse or the neglect or was so indifferent to our situation. We turn it on ourselves. Like you said, you blame yourself for everything you experience, and then you run around trying to avoid that. Goodness gracious.
The thing that I found is that every area of life that doesn't work can be traced directly to this hurt. The finding and healing of this hurt is literally one of the most important things you can ever do in your life. Because everything we do to avoid it's going to create more of it. So if I have a fear of rejection, on the surface, I have a fear of somebody rejecting me. But at a deeper level, we never resist the circumstances, we resist the emotion. So if somebody rejects me, that proves that down deep, I'm really not worth loving. I'm worthless, not worth loving.
Absolutely.
And then, and that's a threat. If that's the truth, if that really is the truth that I'm not worth loving, why even be alive? So that rejection will be perceived as a threat to my survival. So my whole life is going to be about how do I make sure I don't get rejected? So I sell my soul, you know, whatever you want. And then, but we'll act in a way that will sabotage our relationships and create more rejection and push away the very thing we want, which is love.
Exactly. Exactly. And the ego will put everything in a certain proportion. There is no size to miracles and there's no size to hurt. Things just hurt. It depends on how the ego perceives the event. So you could have someone that you bump into at a restaurant brush you off a little bit. And your response to that can be, the nerve. But then when it's something closer that has more potential to really hurt you, that's where the fear is really triggered and the fans are flamed by the ego. This is that perception of the size perception, a big hurt versus a little hurt, and the extremes that we'll go to avoid that hurt. Why can't we just kind of get a balance between the two and look at it clearly that it's not the rejection. It's what you tell yourself about yourself when that happens.
Yeah. And that hurt can all get healed. Because the hurt is never, never based on fact. What happened is a fact. What we did with it is not.
Yes, that's true. Your perception and the decisions we make with all the wisdom of a child that we just weren't good enough or that we deserved it somehow. And it's not about deserving and it's not about fairness. So what's your approach to healing the hurt? Or is that part of your awesome, you know, one-on-one work? Is that something
I'll tell you exactly. But I'm not really going to be answer that in a real short amount of time, but real bottom line, we create the belief that we're worthless, not good enough, not worth loving, failure, or whatever. And then we fight the belief that we created. And then we fight all the emotion associated with it.
Right.
But fighting the belief magnifies the belief. Fighting the emotion magnifies the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing you can do to get rid of worthless, not good enough, or whatever the issue is, because everything we do to get rid of it validates it, magnifies it, gives it more power.
Absolutely.
You cannot get rid of it. But what you can do is you can take away its relevance and be so what about it? You
right.
can get to the place where you can say, yeah, that's part of me. It's part of being human. So what? And in the so what, you have freedom.
Absolutely. And everything that you just said, that's what, you know, intensifies our reaction to the situation. It just builds it and builds it and builds it and makes it so overwhelming. When we do get to that matter of fact attitude about the circumstances of our lives, I like to share with people in a way that says, you know, if you're conducting this exercise, tell me about yourself in a way that is merely stating fact. Tell me something about you that is wonderful. Tell me something about you that you would like to change. But just state it as a fact. You don't have to feel shame about it. The fact is that some people are good at certain things and some people have weaknesses when it comes to certain skills. It's just a fact.
Yes.
And that's okay. And there's no need to feel less than someone or inferior to someone else. Yes. You could just say, oh, I have this skill, that person has that skill, and be okay with all of it. That's where that comfort comes for me.
Yeah. You see, and that's where life works. See, it's when we fight what so, or we fight what may happen, that creates a state of fear and upset. It generates all sorts of emotion, but the emotion destroys our ability to see clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And in that emotion, we're threatened, which forces destructive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you're free of the emotion, the more you get you back, the more you get your peace back. And in that state of peace, you're able to make decisions and take actions based on fact. And when you make decisions and take action based on fact, life works. And when we make decisions and take action based on emotion, which is what we do most of the time,
mm-hmm.
that makes life a lot worse.
It does. And I like to say that the best way to kind of kickstart that, how do I get there, people might be asking. Well, I say, make a decision, make a choice, and use anger as a tool to help you get clear. I always say that every emotion has a negative and positive expression. The negative expression of anger would be destruction and destructive behavior, right? The positive expression of it would be, get clear. No, I'm done with the situation, or I'm done with the circumstance. I want to make a change. That's where we get to the cause. Use that as your springboard to get clear and decide what needs to happen moving forward, changes that need to be made, and then how to act on that. And that's a good way to get there and to get back to what we were saying earlier about the cause, either be the cause or be the effect.
Another thing, the opportunity is to be free of the anger, because anger is a defense mechanism.
This is true.
Anger, resentment, and blaming are all deflections. They're focusing over there. That's the problem outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
We're forcefully pointing outside of us because we don't want to look inside of us. We don't want to see that we're the problem.
Exactly.
And more specifically, that we're worthless, not good enough, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which has nothing to do with the truth, but in the automatic attempt to avoid that hurt, we have anger, resentment, and blaming.
So anytime
you're angry, anytime you're experiencing anger, notice the hurt that's under it. The moment you go to the hurt and you're willing to feel the hurt, you feel the hurt willingly like a child, mm-hmm. the anger will disappear in an instant.
It's true. And I discovered this years ago about myself, that I was very slow to anger. But when I got there, it was because someone hurt me first.
Yeah.
Then I became angry. And that was a fascinating discovery.
Yeah.
If it didn't hurt, then I don't get angry. And then I can take it in stride or handle it appropriately, you know, in a mature way. But when I'm hurt first, it still takes me a little while, but I get to anger, and then I have to work with it and discover, go into the conditioning that was triggered with the hurt.
Yeah, and what's so important, see, the body is designed to constantly purge itself of impurities.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've got suppressed hurt from the past, that's a major impurity. It's going to sabotage my health. It's going to create destructive behavior. It's just like, it's a major impurity. The body just naturally wants to purge it.
Right.
So what an upset is, if you look at what an upset really is, some circumstance comes along and triggers a suppressed emotion that was already there.
Mm-hmm.
But the circumstance triggers it and brings it to the surface so we can grab it and pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what an upset is. An upset is always there. An upset is avoided hurt. An upset is the reactivation of this suppressed emotion, bringing it to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that's valuable is anytime you get upset, first thing is to notice, oh, I'm having an upset. That's very powerful, because then you move from being in the middle of it to being the observer.
Yes.
And then from that place of being the observer, then the next step is to separate the circumstance from the emotion. The way you separate them is to simply notice where they're located. The circumstance is outside of me. The emotion is inside of me. The moment you notice the emotion and see, oh, there's all the emotion. There it is. The circumstance loses power in an instant, because you discover that you're not dealing with the circumstances, you're dealing with the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
The next step is to get that emotion out of you. And the way you do that is to dive into it, feeling it deliberately, purposely, because you choose to, willingly, like a child.
Yeah.
And when you feel the hurt willingly like a child, that allows it to come, run its course, and go. But in our culture, we're not taught to feel our hurt willingly. No. We're taught to feel it unwillingly. You want to cry about something? I'll give you something to cry about.
That's true.
We're taught to shove it. But when we shove it, that destroys the natural healing process. So that instead of having the hurt go, when we fight it, we turn it into pain and we give it more power.
And that's only going to lead to patterns in our lives, behavioral patterns.
Absolutely.
And cycles and circumstances that come around all the time, like this again, this again.
Yeah. And it also messes up our body.
This is true.
They've been having studies that show that when you're in a state of peace, the body releases a particular type of hormone that has the cells rebuilt.
Hmm.
But you see, the moment we're not at peace, that hormone stops. So instead of the body healing, the body secretes a different type of chemical that has the body begin to self-destruct. They're discovering now that there's a direct link between serious physical problems and suppressed emotion. And the body knows that, and the body just automatically wants to release that. The body wants to get rid of that suppressed emotion.
Yeah.
And that's what an upset is. The upset is the releasing of that emotion. But our job is, instead of shove it, our job is to grab it and pull it out.
Yeah, we tend to push it down or push it away.
Kind of like
you
a splinter.
You
get a
come.
Splinter, you get a splinter in your finger and you can't find the splinter.
Yeah.
Well, it'll eventually work its way to the surface so you can grab it and pull it out.
It does.
But what would hurt is the splinter comes to the surface and then we push it back in so we don't have to look at it.
But that's, great analogy.
But that is exactly what happens with regards to hurt, which is absolutely insane.
It's exactly what we do. Absolutely.
And feeling the hurt does not equal healing it. It's how you feel it determines whether the hurt goes or stays.
So what should you look for? What would you say to that?
Well, there's basically two different ways you can feel the hurt. You can feel it at cause, or you can feel it at the effect. You can feel it as a victim of the circumstance, or you can feel it deliberately, purposely, because you choose to. In our culture, in the realm of circumstance, almost always we feel our hurt as a victim at the effect. And when you feel the hurt as a victim, a person can cry hours a day for months and have little or no healing. But if you take the exact same hurt, feel it deliberately, purposely like a child, you can have a major healing in moments.
Totally. I want to share something with you. I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but it's been years and I want to say it again. What I noticed, I had a huge loss in 1993. Someone close to me died. What I observed in that time, because I cried daily, I had an opportunity to observe and then dug down deep into that. I wanted to know where it was coming from. What I noticed, here's the conclusion of my little experiment or observation. When my tears were clear and simply wet my face, I knew I was crying from my ego. When I felt dried salt all over my face, I knew I was really healing. Those were healing tears. I was feeling the hurt properly and releasing it, and my face would just be so tight with the salt. But one day I was just, you know, crying like I always did, and my entire face was wet, but I was like, it's not sticky. It's not tight. What's going on here? And then I figured it out. That's from a place of, I don't like the circumstance. You know, it hurts my feelings to real loss and the pain of loss, the real pain of loss. As you feel it, it heals it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the way to tell whether you're feeling it, the hurt at cause or at the effect,
mm-hmm.
is to notice the direction of your focus.
Okay.
When you're focusing on the circumstances, you're going to feel your hurt as a victim and it stays.
Okay.
When your focus is on the emotion and getting it out of you, it can dissipate quickly.
I found a technique about a year or two ago I want to share. I had woken up. My consciousness was coming back. I remembered whatever I was upset about. And I said, okay, try something different. So I was still in bed. I had just basically come to consciousness. And the memory of what I was going through reasserted itself, you know, by the ego. And I said, no, do this. So I gathered the emotion, and while I was laying there, I made myself kind of float in it like it was a pool of water. And I floated in it, and I felt it. And I said, you know what? It's just pain, or it's just fear. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Because it goes away. And I did. And then I felt it dissipate, and I was like, oh, now you're on to something. What do you think of that? Yeah. Isn't that, it was so effective. I loved
it. Absolutely, it's like when you let it be there,
yeah.
It dissipates.
And it did.
Yes. Yes. And it's just like what you just described is like, it's just beautiful. It's just a great way of flowing with it.
Yes.
It's like the yellow balloons. You fight the yellow balloons, you get yellow balloons everywhere. But if you just let them be there, they run their course and disappear. And that's what you did, which you just allowed yourself to float into the emotion. You let it be there and it would run its course and disappear.
Absolutely. Energy wants to move. We are the ones who grab a hold of it, identify with it, claim it, make it ours, put it into our story, and hold on to it selfishly. Yeah. Like, this is who I am and what I'm, my value. And it's not meant to do that.
What's so valuable is to be willing for anything to happen, be willing for everything to happen, let go of all attachment.
Yes.
And then go for your dreams.
There you go. Wow.
It's exciting. It's just, it's fascinating to look. For me, I've always been curious, all my life, always been curious. It's like, how does life work? What is it to be human? And I remembered at a little boy, 9 years old, saying there has to be a blueprint for happiness. It can't just happen. And I remember I would tell people and they would laugh at me. And then later I discovered It's true. It's true. It's like we have the ability to be in that state of oneness most all the time.
Yeah. It's choice.
Yes, it's choice. And it's also there's things that you need to know. Like you got to know how to do it. You got to know how to heal. You got to, you know, get rid of the junk. There's steps. But the thing is, it's possible.
It truly is.
Yeah. It takes looking. There has to be an awakening, and it takes looking at life in a very different way.
And it's interesting how you mentioned a 9-year-old little boy saying, there's got to be a blueprint. And when I was around 5 or 6, do you remember that Coca-Cola commercial that came out and they were lighting candles and it might have been the Hands Across America thing? But the lyrics were, I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. I'd like to buy the world a Coke and keep it company.
Wow.
That hit me hard.
Wow.
Because I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to change the world.
Wow.
And so that is what put me on the path to discovering in my way how life worked.
And you never, it's not a place to get to. It's a direction to go.
Yes.
I've been doing this work since the late 70s. I've been doing it full time since the mid 80s. And it's like I've discovered lots. And at the same time, I have got so far to go.
Yeah.
But the quality of my life now, I have more love. I get moved just thinking about this. I have more love in my life every day that I ever thought possible for any human being to have ever. And that's the norm. And there is so far to go. See, it's like, it's not a place to get to, it's a direction to go. But every step along the way, life gets better and better and better. And that's wonderful, but it takes looking at life in a different way. We're taught in our culture, we're taught everything we need to know about how to mess up our lives.
And yet I had a thought earlier that slipped my mind, and I think I have it back now. And what I had wanted to say was, we each of us have a path to love. No matter the circumstances of your life, the conditioning, the twists and turns that take place, the hurts and the people who come in and the people who leave. We all have a path to love. And for some of us, that's about learning to love others. But for the rest of us, it's about learning to love ourselves. And you have to determine which path you're on. Is it about others? Or is this an inner journey that you need to take? And then put your foot on that path and just get started and keep going and love yourself the whole way.
Yes. Yeah. And what creates love is giving acceptance. To love yourself, you have to accept yourself,
right,
particularly the aspects of ourselves that we've been taught shouldn't be there.
Yes.
So when you can own all the aspects of you, the worthy, the worthless, the brave, the coward, the success, the failure, the good, the bad, the ugly, when you can own all the aspects of you, you become whole and complete. You cannot be threatened. You cannot be hurt. And life is constantly trying to put us to that place.
All the time. It's like, just identify those archetypes within you. Come to acceptance with each. And that's what I mean about emotions having a negative and positive expression. You just kind of outlined it. The failure, the success. There's that negative and positive archetype that we seem to feel inside us. Which
we
one
can
are you?
Own it all.
Yeah.
It has no power.
Don't be afraid to fail and don't be afraid to succeed. A lot of us have both of those going on simultaneously.
Yeah. Wow. Exciting.
It is exciting. See, we get all, we get so energized and just to talk about it and experience it and even remember things in my mind, immense periods of growth, while they were very, very painful. I can't deny the gratitude that I have for having observed it and studied it so closely. Here's my little, recipe or formula for wisdom. I started with observation Observe, take it all in dispassionately, no emotions, detach, a conscious detachment. Then you analyze what went wrong, what went right, how did it make you feel, that type of analyzation. Then you integrate what you discovered. Well, it's a hurt. It's a hurt from when that I first felt in childhood, and they basically just poked at that wound. And then you apply it. So it's observation, analyzation, integration, application. Try to use something like that to approach these emotions or what's really beneath the surface that keeps getting triggered or keeps patterns in your life. And I think you're off to a good start. How would you share your process as from the late 70s until now?
Well, I used to be a divorce attorney. And my focus as a divorce attorney was to have my clients heal their relationship, one human being to another. And I was really good at it. Something like 15% of my clients canceled their divorce and got back together. And of the 85% that did divorce, virtually all of them did it as friends.
Yeah.
And very rarely, all I saw was my client. Very rarely did I ever see the other person. So all I worked with was my client. But when my client shifted how he or she was towards the other person, it shifted how the other person responded in return.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up seeing was that relationships are not 50-50, they're 100-100.
Absolutely.
And then I started learning a lot about relationships, and I started learning about how love is never enough to have a relationship work. The thing that makes the difference is not the love, it's the experience of love. If I interact with you in a way where you will feel loved, our relationship will be great. If I interact with you in a way where you feel unloved, our relationship will be a mess. So if I want my relationship with you to be great, it's up to me. I need to make sure you feel loved. So in the beginning, it was all about learning how to create that experience of love in relationships. And then there was a point where I started realizing that it's not just about creating our experience of love in relationships. It's about having that experience of love in all of life. And then I started discovering about these core issues and about how these core issues are the thing that keeps us from doing that, and how to have that experience of love in our relationships and in our life. We got to heal the hurt that's so destructive. And then, you know, it seemed like, oh, the experience of love, that's the place to be. But then I started seeing that, no, that's the gateway to something far more profound. The experience of love is the gateway where you can connect with God. And that's where I am now, is discovering that. And it is beautiful beyond words. And the thing that's so great, it's the natural state. We just get so disconnected from it.
Yeah.
We lose who we are.
But in gaining that connection, what you're doing is bringing heaven to earth.
Yes.
And experiencing it here. Well said, Bill. Well said. Well, again, this has been wonderful. I am looking forward to all of our future segments. You can expect, ladies and gentlemen, the same type of energy that we have here. I want to remind you, masteryoflife.com is where you want to go to explore everything that Bill offers the community. He's got quite a bit of content to explore. And spiritualinsightsradio.com is where you want to go to review the archives of divine transmissions, healing segments, join the community. I should be having a few interesting announcements coming up very soon. Bill, thank you so much for your time, your light, and your wisdom today.
Thank you. Now look forward to next time.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. That's our show for today. Until next time, God bless and be at peace.